Hello, and welcome to ASUG Talks, a podcast series featuring candid career conversations with ASUG members who lead or work on SAP teams across the United States and Canada. My name is Jim Lichtenwalter. I'm the ASUG Content Manager and your ASUG Talks host. In this episode, I'm excited to be joined by Vinny Merchandani. Vinny is an author in the SAP ecosystem and the CEO of Deal Architect. Vinny, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Vinny, I want to start off with your time. You have a very storied career. You've been in the IT landscape industry for a while. I'm excited to dive into that. But I want to start with your time as a consultant at PwC, where you started your career. Would love to know, how did you wind up in that role, and how did it prepare you for what you're doing now?
So, out of school, I wanted to go into consulting. It was a young profession back then, technology consulting. But I joined an accounting firm, Pricewaterhouse. And back then they had, they were like, you got to pay your dues. You got to go to the audit side. You got to get your CPA. Oh, by the way, Vinny, it's going to be good education. You're going to learn about business processes and all these audit clients. It was about half true what they told me. A lot of it was drudgery. Auditing is not much fun. So I couldn't wait to get out of that and get into consulting. Eventually I had my chance. They said, "You got good news and bad news for you. You got an assignment in Saudi Arabia, which is not exactly a plum assignment, but you'll be able to get into consulting." And I jumped at the opportunity. And the first project was we were putting in packet software for a bunch of different oil and gas company operations in Saudi Arabia. So that was a great start for a young consultant. And it introduced me. Back then, people used to custom develop a lot of functionality. So that was my first exposure to packaged software. And since then, I've done nothing but packaged software, SAP being obviously a very dominant form of packaged software. So no, it was a very good introduction and allowed me to see a lot of different products, ended up being my gateway to Gartner and all the things I've done since.
Where were you? Were you at PwC or were you at Gartner when you first encountered SAP? When did you first encounter SAP?
First encountered SAP in 1989. So part of what I was doing in London was helping the UK operations get into packaged software. Right? So they had just put in a data center in the Docklands area. I don't know if Docklands were undeveloped back then, but it was becoming a major financial hub center. Yeah. And they put a data center there, and it was like nothing there in the data center, right? It was like people were rattling around in that building, nothing there. So they came to me and they said, "Hey, look, Vinny, why don't we put two pieces of software here so we can do demos, we can do prototyping and so on. Pick an American software and pick a European software." So the American software was pretty easy. McCormick & Dodge was a dominant vendor back then. And so we said, we put McCormick & Dodge. European, we go, "My God, what are we going to find?" So somebody said, "Hey, there's this promising vendor called SAP." So I had two teams prototype, set up demos and prototypes on both pieces of software. The US one, that team loved me because it was like, I had done it before, I could coach them and so on. SAP, the team hated me because not only did I not know much about it, all the manuals were in German. There was no support in London. Oh my God, they had the contrast was quite. But you could see back then, it was a very, very comprehensive system even back then, and you could see the promise. So when I came back to the U.S. in 1990, I said, "Guys, we've got to invest heavily in this piece of software."
With that in mind, this is an epic question, but since you first encountered SAP back in 1989, how would you say, what are the main ways SAP as a company has changed and its focuses have changed? What are some of those pronounced changes that you've seen over the years?
Oh my God, that's 30 years, right?
Yeah.
It's probably gone through five or six iterations. Back then the product was green screen, ugly. I mean, very difficult to navigate. Some of the help was still in German. So, from a from our U.S. perspectives, it's a miracle they've done as well as they did. To their credit, I mean, they made a lot of investments to, you know, make it much more usable for the U.S. market and so on. So that was one iteration, right? At Gartner, I saw their second iteration, which is people were looking for a Y2K solution, and they were looking for a global solution, and they were looking for an enterprise-wide, not just a, you know, one module at a time solution. And so they really took off like a rocket. So, you know, I joke with SAP folks. I go, you know, I probably sent you 1,000 customers in that time frame. Okay, you owe me a lot of commission for that for those 5 years. I would say that was the second, probably the most impactful of the iterations they've had. Right. I would say the next 10 years, verticalization became a major focus. So, you know, the different IaaS solutions started to come out. They started to become much more internet savvy because they were very, very mainframe up to that point. So that probably was the third iteration. The fourth iteration was when McDermott started making all the cloud acquisitions, because by now they were looking dated in that they didn't have a, you know, cloud solution, multi-tenant solution, and so on. And so all the acquisitions he started to make of SuccessFactors and Ariba and so on would be another iteration. And by the way, you know, around the same time they were pushing HANA very heavily. So that was another part of that stage. And then, you know, in the last few years, it's been S/4HANA has been as a major focus, along with the cloud applications maturing, becoming more integrated, and so on. So I would say that's the iterations I've seen them go through. And I'd like to see them go through a couple more. So we talk about that. But you know, I mean, it is, I admire companies that can reinvent themselves that often. And, you know, you'll talk to some people and they'll say, oh my God, SAP is such a boring old mainframe, dirty, ugly UX kind of company. I just give you a very nuanced view of it's been evolving every 5 years.
You said that you would like to see them take some other iterations. Do you have an iteration that you would like to pitch on this podcast?
No, but, you know, I mean, in the last book I wrote about them, one of the things I brought out was I used the example of how the U.S. expanded, right? When Jefferson bought the Louisiana Purchase, it doubled our landmass. And then the pioneers, different pioneers, the Oregon Trail, the Mormon Trail, the 49ers, and so on. Maybe just grew and grew and grew gradually, right? The slogan back then was Manifest Destiny. So my book, actually, the subtitle was Manifest Destiny. That was like, SAP, you've done great, but so much more you could have done, right? You could have been, Facebook and Google didn't exist 15 years ago. I mean, Google's become a $100 billion company, right? You missed the whole digital marketing opportunity, okay? Look at Amazon or Microsoft Azure. The infrastructure as a service opportunity. So I had several $100 billion markets that SAP is kind of like, yeah, that's not us, or it'd be too difficult. Something has kept them very focused, which in a way is good. But then if you miss out on $100 billion markets,
You mentioned your book. I think that's a nice transition to sort of the next part of our conversation that I want to have. SAP Nation, you know, beyond SAP Nation, you're a prolific author in this space and writer. I'm also a writer, and so I like asking writers this question. What got you into consistent professional writing? Like, what was sort of your writing origin story?
I think it was a moment of madness. Every time I finish a book, I go, never again, right? I've written 7 books. And you really have to be very passionate, right? It takes a lot of work to be able to deliver one. Kind of like when I left Gartner, I did a startup. And after 3 years, we hit the dot-com bubble and ended up, it failed in the end, right? So I had to make a decision whether I go back to a job or start another company. And I started Deal Architect, which is a partly an analyst firm. It's partly an advisory firm. It's partly a publishing firm. And so I said, well, if you're going to call themselves a publisher, we need to publish something. So I started to write a couple of blogs in 2005. And now, you know, blogs are relatively easy, right? I mean, it's one or two pages at a time. But if you look at what I made up for, it's in the 15 years, I've written about 7,000 blogs. So at the end of 5 years, I was writing so much, and somebody said, Vinny, why don't you write a book? Take this and make a book out of it. So that's when the moment of madness came. A book is quantum more difficult. You know, just because you've written blogs, it doesn't mean that translates into a book.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners are at least familiar with SAP Nation, but for those of them who aren't, can you tell us a little bit about SAP Nation and how the project and the book itself came about? I know there've been a few different versions too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, evolution, right? So there have been three episodes of SAP Nation. The first one came about, SAP wasn't happy that it came about, was, you know, as having come up Pricewaterhouse, I understood the whole systems integration game, right? And I could see when I was at Gartner, I was already starting to see integrators, the quality wasn't very good. I mean, it's very difficult to scale a people business, you know, because everyone is so different. The quality wasn't very good. The overruns were starting to show up. This is already in the late 90s. And every chance I got to sit down with SAP, I would say, guys, you need to pay more attention to this. And they were like, well, Vinny, it's not our competence. And, you know, I mean, come on, it's not that bad. It was always a, you know, they would always be polite to their partners. And I said, I don't expect you to be hostile to them, but put guardrails around them, because it's costing your customers a lot of money and a lot of quality issues. Well, so for 10 more years, so this was in 2000, I had left Gartner. 10 more years as an advisor, I was seeing that I was helping clients procure SAP application management or SAP upgrades or SAP hosting, right? So I was seeing all the quality issues continue. So in 2009, I had an opportunity, a client said, Vinny, estimate for me what the opportunity is in the SAP ecosystem. So I built a very detailed model of, you know, how many people does Accenture have, how many people does Ernst & Young have, how many people does IBM have, how many staff support have ABAP for customers. I mean, so it was a very elaborate model. How much have people spent on hardware? How much have people spent on telecom in the SAP world and so on? Okay. And when I crunched the numbers, I was shocked. The cheapest of the versions, I had different assumptions. The lowest cost assumption model made SAP Nation, if there is such a thing, 48th largest GDP in the world. And I go, this can't be right. I looked at it every which way. But I went to SAP and I said, guys, I'm going to write a book about this. But I want you to validate it, okay? And I'll give you 30 pages at the end. You guys, I want edited. It's your voice. Tell me what you're going to do to change it. So I thought it was fair. I gave them, you know, validate it and tell us what you're going to do. They did take me up on the first one. And, you know, they have a couple of strategy consulting folks, ex-McKinsey folks who looked at it. And they nitpicked a little bit, but they said, look, Vinny, I mean, can't argue with you too much. Right? With your assumptions, the numbers look okay. The second part, they kept saying, yeah, we'll send it. They didn't say, I don't think they thought I was going to publish this, honestly. So when it came out, all the panic buttons went off. Okay. But I had to keep telling them, guys, this is not about you. This is about your ecosystem. Don't take this personally, right? This is meant to just showcase how much money is being wasted in the ecosystem, okay? And I had strategies for customers, how to reduce the spend, how to ring fence around SAP. I had a whole bunch of, and I had a lot of customer case studies of people who had made some progress towards controlling their spend. So, you know, the book was pretty successful. Most customers bought it. Some of them wished I hadn't written it because their CEOs were saying, what the hell is going on? Why are you spending on this, right? But most of them appreciated the fact that I had shown them how to try and manage that cost. SAP hated it. You know, because it was like, oh, you're making us look bad. I'm like, guys, it's taken me 15 years to tell you this. I didn't spring a surprise on you. So that was the first one. Around the time they had announced S/4HANA. Okay. But they missed their opportunity to talk about it in the 30 pages. So I didn't know it was coming out. Like within 3 months of my book coming out, they announced it. And I said,
oh, no.
So I released SAP Nation 2, which was my view on how long, you know, how mature S/4HANA would be and how long would it take and so on. And so what I did there was I said, let me compare to other next generation products. So Oracle Fusion, Microsoft had its own. So I looked at four or five other comparable software vendors and how long it took their next generation products to mature. And I wasn't far off. You could see S/4HANA is still going through its paces, right? It's taken a while to become mainstream within the SAP customer base. But that was, you know, that was more of a comparison. It was more of a showcasing of what other vendors had done, okay? SAP Nation 3, which came out about 4 years ago, was much more generous to SAP because this reflected SAP, not the, I avoided the ecosystem. So that is still not solved, but I'm not going to focus on that. I'm going to focus on all the good stuff SAP's done around S/4HANA, around its cloud properties, around, you know, different products they don't talk much about, asset information network and so on. And SAP helped me get a lot of customers in ASA. Jeff introduced me to a number of ASA customers who became case studies in the book and so on. So, you know, it was a much more positive book about SAP. Some people were very disappointed. Some people thought it would be another hammer SAP book. And what happened to you, Vinny? I was like, why should I always be nasty? SAP is a very positive company that does a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. I got to ask, is there a part four in the works?
Well, there is a version that's going to come out, but it's not going to be part four. That's all I can say for now. I'll be able to tell you in a few months what's coming up.
When you're ready to talk about it, let me know. And you can come back on the podcast and talk about it.
I'll be happy to. But you know, let me just, as a glimpse, it is looking at what has happened in the last 3 or 4 years, right? The world has gone through a lot of shocks. We've had a digital transformation shock in some companies. I mean, dramatically, right? I mean, when you change business models, when you dramatically do transformation, it's a shock to an enterprise, right? COVID has been a huge shock to different industries, right? Climate change is affecting a lot of industries in terms of circular economy thinking, sustainability and product design. I mean, every aspect is being challenged, right? And now the whole energy transition as a result of what's happening in Ukraine, that's a huge shock to the global economy. So, you know, given all these shocks, what I'm working on is looking at how has that affected industries, technologies, processes, and how is SAP fared, or SAP customers faring, given all these shocks? And actually, SAP, you know, if I were to reveal a little bit of the, remove some of the suspense, SAP is such a global, such a cross-industry, such a technologically savvy company. Actually, SAP customers are some coping better than many others.
We've found that too in our Pulse survey that we do every year, the Pulse the SAP customer. I don't want to make you tip your hand too much, on this new upcoming release, but out of curiosity, purely from a writer's perspective, when obviously Russia invaded the Ukraine, was that a moment for you when you were writing where you were like, oh man, this project's changed, or now I have a whole new addition that I have to add in?
No, but I think two or three things became very, very, very acutely came into focus. You know, we're going through this back and forth on fossil fuel is bad and we need to move to renewable. Well, you know, I've been trying to tell anyone who listened to me, renewables are only about less than 10% of the world's energy is fueled by renewables. About 80% is fueled by fossil fuels, coal, gas, and oil. And 10% comes from nuclear, geothermal, hydroelectric, and so on. And so my point has been, till the bottom two, right, can scale up to 50, 60%, we should not be demonizing fossil fuels. I mean, sure, there's fossil fuels and there are fossil fuels. You can demonize coal, maybe oil, but natural gas has been a pretty clean solution, right? I mean, very few people realize U.S. greenhouse gas emissions in 2020 were the same as in 1990. Not because we're a clean tech leader, but because our utilities have moved away from coal to natural gas, right? So I think we'll have to be a lot more pragmatic about we're not there in terms of renewables or other alternatives. How do we make that transition? That transition becomes hugely important, and we can't politicize it. We've got to plan for that very, very carefully.
SAP Nation, a project like that, it sounds like you start with a central thesis, which is great, you know, to start with a thesis like that. How do you go about tackling a project like that, though? What are the specifics? Do you sit down and sketch it out? Do you kind of already have it sort of mapped out in your head?
It evolves. You know, I mean, the research takes about 6 months for any given book, and it evolves quite a bit. But my style has been case study heavy. So every book ends up with 15 or 20 case studies. So that is often the gating factor, not so much the theme. It is, will I be able to get good brand names, a variety of industries, a variety of countries in the case studies? Okay. If somebody brings those to me, I've written a book for a CEO where he organized all the case studies. It was much quicker. I did it in 3 months for him. Right. So I think the theme comes together. But I like the meat, for me, the meat on the bones is, can I get customers to passionately talk about what they've done? Because my voice, I'm an analyst. Of course, I can talk forever, but it's boring stuff, right? When a customer's talk, it's much more in the voice of what the reader wants to hear.
Vinny, last question for you. We're running out of a little bit of time. I'd like to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about Deal Architect Inc. Tell us a little bit about what the organization is and what you all do.
So Deal Architect is partly an analyst firm. So I get invited by SAP, Workday, Salesforce, most of the leading enterprise vendors to their events. You know, I get briefed by them a lot. And a lot of smaller vendors do the same. I have a video series where I let them present in what's called the analyst cam. So in different ways, I get information flow from most of the major software vendors and outsourcers. Okay, so that's my analyst role. I have an advisory role where we work with both vendors and buyers, typically in next generation stuff, right? How, Vinny, what are you seeing that is going to be different for our industry? Or we're looking at next generation automation. What should we be looking at from a strategy perspective? Right? Or buyers will hire me to do due diligence. Some attorneys have hired me to do expert witnesses, testimony for, litigation. So the advisory work tends to be, it's hard to just say, hey, look, I only do this. It tends to be projects, and it tends to be very, very focused on the individual client's needs. And generally, pretty high value for 3, 4, 6 weeks of work. Okay, that's a typical project. The third one is publishing, you know, so a couple of blogs, right? And I've written 7 books so far. So that takes a fair amount of time. Now, you'll say, where do you, you know, when do you sleep? Actually, these feed each other. I mean, the advisory work, I will not publicly ever disclose. If I do something confidential for a client, I'll never share that publicly, right? But I can glean some information for that that may come up in the blog. The blogs feed the books. You know, the books, I always go back to my to vendors and say, give me the case studies, guy. Give me case studies for books, right? So it's kind of a virtuous circle. They feed each other. Different ways of distributing content, if you will. Different forms of content, if you will. Some of them shows up as advice. Some of them shows up as printed books. Some of them shows up as video. I mean, there's a lot of different channels that the intelligence I gather gets out. It's nice to get paid, right? in the social media world, unfortunately, everybody expects everything for free, right? So we got to do some balancing on what goes where.
Yeah, certainly. Vinny, I really do appreciate your time here today and being able to talk us through sort of your career and sort of what you do and your authorship of a lot of great books. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Jim.
And that brings this episode of ASUG Talks to an end. Be sure to join me for the next episode. And remember to generously share these compelling conversations with other ASUG members, your professional community, and industry networks. If you're listening to this on ASUG.com, don't forget that you can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.